Today I'm speaking with Rachel Chung, who is the CEO and founder of Catch a Fire, which connects professionals who want to volunteer their skills with nonprofits that need them. And nonprofits and professionals are matched with each other based on skills and cause areas, and as well as the time availability. And Catch a Fire was founded in the fall of 2008 and has been doing some really interesting work, including a pilot program and some follow-up events. So Rachel, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Olivia.
So I want to go into your background first. What caused you to launch Catch a Fire? What were some of your experiences that you built on, that you drew on to launch this type of platform, which is, it's really new. It's the first of its type in the way that you've actually structured it and facilitate these matches.
Yep, that's right. So actually Catch a Fire was born from very personal experiences. I went into investment banking after college, like many do, and I actually very much wanted to volunteer my financial skills. So I was at UBS Investment Bank, and you know, volunteered through a lot of their corporate volunteer programs. And one day I was on a Habitat for Humanity build, and I was lugging a piece of wood the size of my body, and I was, you know, thinking this is not a good use of my time. Clearly, I'm probably, you know, getting in people's way as opposed to, like, you know, affecting positive change. So I spent the next 6 months looking for a skills-based volunteer opportunity where I could volunteer my, you know, newly minted finance skills, and I couldn't find any way to do so. And I searched for 6 months every day, about an hour a day. And so I thought it was pretty ridiculous that there was no platform that allowed professionals to give what they were good at. I eventually ended up leaving the corporate sector because of this situation, where it very much felt like an either or, where either I stay in, you know, corporate America and not be able to affect social change, which is what I was passionate about, or I leave and go into the social sector. And so that's what I did. So I went into microfinance, and I volunteered my skills with a microfinance organization called Finca for 6 months. And then later, after a stint in South America, and then my first year of graduate school, I came back to New York City, and I helped start up a nonprofit called BRAC USA. And BRAC is a large poverty alleviation organization headquartered out of Bangladesh, where the foundation is microfinance, but on top of that, they build education, health, human rights and legal services, water and sanitation practices. So they take a really holistic approach to poverty alleviation. And I helped the president and CEO, Susan Davis, start up BRAC USA here in New York City. And it was just the two of us, but we, you know, crafted a strategy to use skilled volunteers, and these happened to be my friends. And I actually, you know, contacted my friends because I just needed help. We had so much to do and we just didn't have enough time. And so I contacted my friends who are professionals in marketing and in finance and consulting and whatnot. And I put them, you know, very naturally on short-term, discrete individual projects. So for example, I had Monica help me with my marketing strategy, and I had Jason help review our budget. And I structured projects like this because, you know, I used to be a professional. I knew how busy, you know, life is as a professional. And so I structured projects that would make it really easy for my friends to give their time and to give their skills. And, you know, by using that strategy, we were able to free up my time and Susan's time to focus on what we needed to do, which was, you know, grow the programs and build the foundation for the organization and fundraise, importantly. And I managed about 15 of these skilled volunteers over the course of 9 months. And in that time, Susan and I were able to raise $40 million for the organization. And you know, that was a big lesson for me, which is not that, you know, every organization has the capacity to raise as much money as BRAC, but that, you know, nonprofits, you know, really can use the goodwill of professionals to run their organizations more effectively and outsource a lot of work that they don't internally have expertise on to professionals who actually want to volunteer those skills. And so from there, you know, I thought every nonprofit should be able to do what we did at RAC USA. And that was really, you know, the other piece of the equation for me to start Catch a Fire. And so from there last year, I put the business plan together, and this was when I went back to school to finish my second year. So I took a leave of absence to start RAC USA, and then I went back to school. And in that final year of my Master's of Public Policy at Duke, I wrote the business plan for Catch a Fire. I recruited a bunch of business school students to help me, and then it was off to the races. And so since then, you know, we've conducted our pilot program, we've launched our alpha site, and we are an online marketplace that's connecting nonprofits and social enterprises to skilled volunteers.
So it's really interesting. When you were working on, when you're recruiting your friends to do some of the strategy and building up the infrastructure for RAC USA, did you start that with, hey, I've got a friend and I could really use his or her expertise and time, or did you begin it and have more of a strategic plan in place to use these volunteers to build the infrastructure?
So the question is, did we have a plan before we brought on these volunteers at RAC?
Right. Did you start to bring them on and then say, wow, if I streamline
it,
you had a plan?
It was more that we had a plan, of course, like that, you know, we were reactive in some ways because we had a lot to do. But we very much thought through our strategy in terms of how we would get the most out of our volunteers. And I brought that philosophy to Catch a Fire. I think that it's really important that nonprofits think about volunteering as a two-way street, as opposed to how it's typically thought of nowadays, I think, where, you know, it's more of a one-way street where nonprofits, because, you know, volunteers are free, it's natural to think that, okay, well, if they're free, they're expendable. But that's in reality not true, obviously, because a volunteer, particularly a skilled volunteer who is a busy professional, gives up a lot, you know, time to volunteer. And so what we're doing at Catch a Fire is we're trying to institutionalize that philosophy, and we're doing that by charging nonprofits for access to our database of skilled volunteers. So they're paying, you know, what we call a project fee, or you could think about it as a registration fee, to be able to get matched to one of our skilled professionals. And again, the philosophy behind that is we want our nonprofit organizations to have skin in the game and to actually think about what they need before they decide to bring on somebody who is committing, you know, a significant amount of their time to volunteer and to help out.
Mm-hmm. And it looks like that the match takes place automatically. There's different projects that are listed in terms of the functions, but does the match take place automatically on the site through software, or is it something that you and your team members help to connect?
That's a great question. Right now, in our alpha release, we don't have the full matching functionality built, and we're actually working on that, like, as we speak. Our beta site will be launching sometime in the fall, where the full functionality of matching will be in there. So to answer your question, it is, you know, a software. It is an algorithm. The reason why that is so important is because we want to scale the solution. But that's not to say that we haven't done, you know, hand matching in the beginning, and that actually right now a lot of our matching is being reviewed by a human to make sure that it is accurate. And, you know, as we do that better, and as, you know, it is informed by the human, our matching algorithm will become smarter. But right now, on Alpha, the way it works is that If you as a volunteer come into our system, you provide us with your profile information. And what that means is very easily you can give us your LinkedIn URL, and then we populate your profile for you. And so we're collecting your skill information, we're collecting your work experience information, and we're collecting your cause interest. And from there, when we have that information about you, we're then able to deliver you a customized list of nonprofit projects that you're interested in. So instead of, you know, filtering through pages and pages of volunteer projects that, you know, don't interest you, Catch a Fire delivers you a very tailored, customized, short list of projects that you can then choose from. On the other side of the equation, a nonprofit comes to our system and identifies their need based on our project menu. Our project menu is actually, you know, the heart of Catch a Fire. I think it's something that really sets us apart from the other players in the space. And what it is essentially a menu of project templates. And what we've done at Catch a Fire over the past year is we've interviewed hundreds of nonprofits here in New York City, asking them what their needs are in terms of their skilled volunteer needs. And what we found is that, you know, nonprofits actually generally have a hard time articulating what it is they need and scoping that work. And the reason why that's hard is because they don't have an, you know, in-house expert in any one of these areas to actually, you know, construct a project that is clear and easy to, you know, communicate. And so what we do for them is that legwork. So we're constructing project templates where a project is defined by three things. Every Catch a Fire project is defined by the three following characteristics. One, that the project is short-term, in that the project can be completed in less than 50 hours of flexible volunteer time, which on average is actually ends up to be more like 30 hours of volunteer time. Two, that the project is discrete, in that there's one deliverable, and three, that it is individual. And so an example of a project template, and you can see this by just going to our projects menu at catchafire.org, is, for example, a social media strategy. And the social media strategy project template has a definition of what a social media strategy is, has a, you know, a description of what the deliverable is, the step-by-step components of the scope, as in the scope of work, and then the requirements of the nonprofit and the volunteer, what is required of both those parties before they're able to, you know, successfully engage in that project. And then what that does is it allows both parties to have a clear understanding of what they're getting into before they start the project. And we found that this is so critical to, you know, setting up the volunteer and the nonprofit for success. It really eliminates a big barrier for the volunteer, which is that, you know, the volunteer, particularly the busy professional, wants to know exactly what they're getting themselves into. They want to know how much is expected of them in terms of time, in terms of the deliverable, and we're alleviating all of those concerns by structuring the project for them ahead of time. And then on the nonprofit side, they know exactly what they're expecting out of the volunteer. So when they come together, they immediately can start working, and, you know, this problem of scoping the project and making sure that both parties know what they're doing is alleviated for the most
part. Right, and I see that those profiles of the projects also have suggested or required times that you need, either in-person conversations and meetings or phone calls. So you really are giving it a nice outline and definition. I want to get into how you bring both sides together, because it, you know, theoretically it makes sense, but you have these nonprofits who are paying. So my first question is, how did you bring them in? And then I want to talk about how are you leveraging your volunteers and enlisting them?
Sure. So that's a great question. It's the, you know, typical how do you build a marketplace problem. And so just in terms of thinking about how do we get nonprofits into our system, well, you know, we're rolling out in New York City first, so we're focused on serving New York City nonprofits and social enterprises right now, and we'll roll out nationwide soon. But we are working with, you know, networks of nonprofits. So, for example, in our pilot, we worked with the New York Women's Social Entrepreneur Network, and this network is about 800 women strong. And in this group, there are many nonprofit leaders as well as, you know, individuals who are interested in volunteering. So by working with MWICE, we were able to source about 20 different nonprofits who are interested in our program, and we were able to source, you know, dozens of volunteers. And in that way, we were very we were able to reach a large, you know, a relatively large number of nonprofits all at the same time. And there are many nonprofit networks in New York. There's New York Cares, there's Robin Hood Foundation, there's Young, the YMPN, the Young Network of Young Nonprofit Professionals Network, Starting Block, which is a social enterprise network, and several others. So by working with them, we're able to reach out to hundreds of nonprofits in New York in a more efficient way. And on the other side of the equation, in terms of how do we get volunteers into our system, well, we're using, you know, social media as a way to reach out to some professionals. We're going to professional networks. So where, you know, for example, if we're recruiting, trying to recruit marketing professionals, we'll go to websites and meetups that attract marketing people. We're also starting to work with corporations. So, for example, a corporation that is focused on marketing clearly has a lot of employees that are talented marketing people, and by working with that specific, you know, corporation, we then are able to source many professionals in that way.
Mm-hmm. So that was one of my questions is, and it sounds like you are, but how, in working with corporations, are you looking at, are you working with the people either in their human resources or corporate social responsibility to bring in people through their employee volunteer programs and to do it company-wide like that?
Yes, that's a great question. So we're building a corporate solution, and we're still in the process of actually, you know, developing this. But the concept is to, for us to be a pipeline of skills-based volunteer opportunities for a corporation. And similar to, you know, their employee volunteer program, where, you know, they provide typically non-skills-based opportunities to their employees, we want to make that program for them more robust by allowing them to now, you know, provide their employees with skills-based volunteer opportunities. And that can be integrated into the company's existing employee volunteer program, or we can help build it for them from scratch.
Very interesting. Okay. That sounds like a great strategy.
And in addition to that, what is very important that we offer are the tools to help a company track and report and promote that community impact. So we'd be able to, you know, aggregate the number of hours that their employees are spending volunteering their skills and their time through Catch a Fire, and then we'll be able to provide reports to the company so that they're able to understand how much impact they're actually making in the community in terms of hours, and then, you know, in terms of like a cash equivalent donation, because time obviously equates to money, and so we're able to provide that information to the company as well.
The volunteers that you're enlisting, are they looking for opportunities like this, or do you and your teammates, are you making an argument to them, in an emotional argument, or what's their relationship to volunteering in this capacity like when they hear about you? Something may need to be introduced to, or they were looking for it like you were, and wow, here's a terrific opportunity, very structured and straightforward.
So just to rephrase, your question is, you know, what is motivating the volunteer to volunteer?
Yes. Shorter.
Yeah, you know, that's actually a pretty complicated question, and it's something that we spend a lot of time thinking about. And it is really important to us to think about how do we make our volunteers happy, because at the end of the day, like, you know, our mission is to make it easy for every professional to be able to give their skills if they want to, and for every nonprofit to be able to access skilled volunteers easily. And so, you know, to do that, to make it easy for every professional to give and to make it attractive, we need to think about what's in it for them. And so, you know, to answer your question, you know, when we think about volunteering, obviously we give because we care and we want to make an impact. In terms of giving our skills, there are other reasons. You know, we may want to build new skills. We may want to work on existing skills and develop those through volunteer opportunities. You know, there's often the opportunity to engage in more leadership opportunities in terms of using your skills in a leadership capacity. You know, skills-based volunteerism provides people the opportunity to network, build their resume. We very much like to provide our volunteers, you know, our volunteer projects are individual, but we like to provide our volunteers with the opportunity to meet each other. So we'll have meetups and happy hours where other Catch a Fire professionals can network with each other. So, you know, there's a multitude of reasons as to why people want to volunteer. But, you know, from my own experience, and this is anecdotal, but there's also, you know, statistical evidence which says that there are, in terms of what we've calculated through Bureau of Labor Statistics, are that there are about 25 million professionals in the United States with skills that actually are relevant to a nonprofit's operations. And, you know, given the fact that about 25% of all Americans volunteer, the actual percentage of professionals who volunteer is much lower than that. And so, you know, we ask ourselves why is that the case? And at Catch a Fire, we think that it's because right now the volunteer the quality of the volunteer experience is actually quite poor, in that, you know, we don't know whether or not we're going to get ourselves into a good situation in terms of a volunteer opportunity that will use our time well, that will actually make the best use of, you know, our skills and all of those things. And so, again, we are thinking about how to increase the quality of the volunteer experience so that we increase the number of professionals who want to give.
Do you have data yet on volunteers who continue a relationship with the nonprofit or who re-enlist for another project through Catch a Fire?
I have data on that, yes, but it's, you know, we have been matching for less than, you know, 6 months, and so we don't have that much data on it. What I can say is that almost 100% of all of our volunteers from pilot have signed up to volunteer with us again.
Interesting. Great. I've got a couple more questions. I want to talk briefly about your advisors. You have, it seems like, looking at your website, a really great cadre of advisors, different commitment levels probably. How did you go about bringing them on board and bringing them into your mission, and how do you use them? This is something that I like to ask entrepreneurs, because I think that it's something that almost seems obvious and it can easily be overlooked, but if you approach it well and strategically, it can be such a boon to a company.
It's very true. All of our advisors were definitely handpicked for multiple reasons. One, you know, they provide strategic value in terms of business experience and advice, but also every single one of our advisors care very much about our social mission, and they're committed to that. And so, in terms of, you know, putting this advisor group together, those were the things that I was thinking about as I, you know, invited them onto our board.
Did you reach out, were some of the people that you didn't know, and was it a lot of networking, or were they already in your network?
Yes, it was a lot of networking.
And then you have an interesting, you've been selected by Investor Circle and also a fellow for West Coast Village Capital, as well as placing in the finals and semifinals with some other competitions. So what was your funding approach? Did you submit to a lot of these fellowships in business competitions, or can you talk about that and any lessons learned or advice that other entrepreneurs utilize?
Sure. Well, I started writing the Catch a Fire business plan while I was, finishing up my master's at Duke. And so school is a great place to start writing a business plan and to actually, launch your business if you can. We didn't launch it at school, but I definitely took advantage of the Duke business plan competition. And from that competition, I was invited to a big competition here in New York called the East Coast Venture Challenge, which was hosted by DFJ Gotham. And from that, we were in the finals on that, as in we were a finalist in that competition. And I met one of my advisors through that competition. And from there, our network really grew in terms of being introduced to other investors in the community, other entrepreneurs in the community. And New York is a really wonderful place to start up a business. The New York tech community is fantastic and supportive and a really close network. And so that has been a huge benefit. In terms of advice to, other entrepreneurs, I would say that if you're a student and you can do it, your school business plan competition, you should definitely go for that, because it's great practice and learning, and you get great advice. And you have to think hard about your business model to succeed well. And then from there, I think that it's just really important to share your idea, to not be afraid that somebody's going to steal it, and just listen to people's advice and network and make sure that you're taking advantage of a community of entrepreneurs that exist in your area.
Did you know that you had a good idea when it first popped into your head, or were you working over this one element of it, and then it took a while to build out the plan for the company? Do you remember, and can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I when I was, a banker and I was thinking about, I was so appalled by the fact that it was impossible for me to find a way to volunteer my skills. I was like, that is a great idea to, somebody needs to build, it's something that's inevitable. Somebody eventually will build a solution that connects professionals to skilled volunteer opportunities. I just thought somebody would do it. I didn't ever think that I would do it. And then later on, when I found out that it still didn't exist, when I was, helping to start up BRAC USA, I was like, okay, well, all the more reason to think about starting it. But before I actually started it, I did a lot of research into the space, and I actually approached a lot of the players in the space and talked to them about this idea. And the first thing my first approach is, why isn't this not built by somebody who's already in the industry, who already has traction, who already has a base of volunteers and a base of nonprofits? And when I found, through my research, I found that, maybe their approach to this was not the same as what I had envisioned, or maybe they just weren't interested in doing it at all, whereas I thought it was very important. And so, yes, I thought it was a great idea, but no, I didn't assume that it would be something that would work. And I think that it's really important to do that market research and to figure out whether or not, existing players will build it and can build it, because why build it if, somebody else can build it faster and quicker? And then from there, when I found that there really is a market opportunity and a need, that's when I started to actually think about doing it myself.
So, and were you speaking with players like Deloitte and Touche or Volunteer Match, or what type of organizations or companies were you going to for information and feedback?
Volunteer Match, Idealist, Smart Volunteer, Taproot, all of the volunteer matching players in my space.
You were born in Australia and lived in different parts of Asia when you were growing up. How do you think, or did your background, having more of an international perspective, impact the launch and the start of Catch a Fire?
I think my background definitely played a part in terms of, you know, my passion for social enterprise and for business and for causes in general. I started volunteering at a very young age. I left Australia when I was 8, and we moved to Beijing right after the Tiananmen Square incident. So I was exposed to poverty at a very young age, and, you know, being exposed to poverty from, as a child who lived in, you know, the first world, Australia was quite a shock to me. And so it was something that I was always, you know, I became passionate about, and it became part of who I am. And I was not comfortable, like, sitting behind a desk at a corporation and not being able to affect change, particularly for my cause, which was poverty alleviation. And so that definitely pushed me to, you know, quit banking and go into the social sector. And I think that, you know, that was the biggest influence it had.
Great. How did you come up with the name Catch a Fire? I think it's a terrific name.
Thanks. We love it too. It is actually one of my favorite Bob Marley albums. The album's name is Catch a Fire. And I think it's very appropriate because on this album are songs such as Lively Up Yourself and Stir It Up. And we think that, you know, volunteering can be transformational. It can really transform somebody to be a giver in the community, to be somebody who always thinks about giving back. And not only that, I think that by giving back, it really can lively up somebody and you know, create really amazing personal transformation. And so it's about personal transformation and also, like, big movement, so big change. And, you know, we're trying to create a movement of skills-based volunteering as well as thinking about that on the personal level. And Bob Marley's Catch a Fire album and the songs there really speak to all of that. And so the name was inspired by Bob.
That's terrific. Rachel, is there anything else that you want to add before we finish our conversation today?
Thanks for really insightful questions.
Thank you.
For more interviews about cause capitalism, visit causecapitalism.com.